Welcome to the Rock Music Alliance interview sessions. I'm your host, Cole Coleman, along with keyboardist Claudio Pesavento, who's from Mahogany Rush and the Chris Squire Band. On our show today, you know her powerhouse vocals from not only her own music, but from being on Rockstar Supernova and The Voice of Holland. And she's performed with many of hard rock's biggest stars. Welcome to our show, Delana.
Hey, guys.
Hola.
Hey, so what is the latest news from Delana? You know, any like recordings or shows being planned, tours?
Delana is a very, very busy girl at the moment. I mean, all of your above questions are like, I can't even get over it in 10 minutes. But I'm busy with right now. I'm one of four singers in a show here in Holland, a theater tour. We have 42 dates. And we're playing 3 to 4 times a week, doing a Motel West Coast tour, which is very ironic because I'm from the West Coast of America. So we're doing a lot of Eagles songs. We're doing a bunch of just songs from the West Coast. So I'm doing like Stevie Nicks songs. I'm doing Linda Ronstadt and Stevie Nicks. And we're doing... yeah, just a 2-hour show of West Coast songs, which is really cool. And then once this is over, and in between, by the way, I'm doing a bunch of my own shows. So I have like 3 shows a week doing the theater stuff and 1 or 2 nights extra doing my own thing. And then I do like house concerts. I do living room concerts. I do... shows with my own band, and we do my original stuff. So I'm constantly busy doing my own thing. And then at the second half of this year, I'm doing my own theater show called the Legendary Woman of Rock show, where I do covers from legendary rock chicks. Like I'm doing Pat Benatar, Stevie Nicks, Cyndi Lauper, Alanis Morissette, Janis Joplin, Tina Turner, doing a bunch of things. But that's interlaced with my own story about my own life, because I'm writing a book at the moment. So I'm using parts of my book to describe why I'm doing these cover songs and what they mean to me, coincided with my own songs, which I've written myself, and the parallels between these legendary women of rock and my life and my songs. So this year I'm really with this Motel West Coast tour and my own tour, Legendary Woman of Rock. And in between doing all the other things with my duo acoustic, my trio acoustic, and my kind of MTV Unplugged band at the same time. So I'm like totally swamped this year.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it. What's the name of the current show again?
The current show is called Motel West Coast.
Motel West Coast. Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a lot of band and with 4 singers. And the main guy who started this, he's a really famous artist in Holland. His name is Sieb van der Ploeg. And he's been doing this show for 15 years. And this is the first year that they've invited me to be part of the show, because the guy who was... with the show before me decided to quit the show, and so I've taken his place. So I'm the newbie, I'm the new kid in town with the Eagles connotation to that.
Given how strong your voice is, I mean, you may be the newbie, but I'm sure you're raising eyebrows and making a good impression.
I'm raising ovations. It's funny you mentioned there was so much conflict between me and the 3 other singers, not the main guy, Sip, who's the main artist, and it's his show, but he invited me in, and the other 2 singers were like, oh, but she's a rock singer and we're theater singers, and she's not really a backing vocalist, and she won't fit in the whole thing. And I just made it my mission to fit in, and I'm killing it. We've already had well, last Saturday was our premiere, but before that we had like 4 tryout shows, and at every tryout I had standing ovations, and I'm the new kid in town. And they were like, what the fuck? She's just like taking over the show. She's like getting standing ovations and she's not a backing vocalist and she doesn't sing with a smooth, clear voice. And I'm like, but that's, I'm a rock chick. I'm not like this Eagles background singer. I'm Delana, you know, I do my thing. Right. So they were a little bit pissed off and intimidated, but I came in with my friendly self and I said, hey guys, you're right. I'm not a backing vocalist. I'm not a,
you're an not Eagles. Human.
Get on and I do my thing and I get standing ovations. So they're like, okay, we're just going to put up with her the way she is.
Yeah, you know, some people are simply born to be soloists. You know, they have the instrument to be a soloist and carry a song. And other people are really kind of more just born to be support people, you know?
You totally get it, Cole. You nailed it. I'm not a backing vocalist. You're right. I give you credit for that comment that you made. Because they were like, we need to fly in a backing vocalist and Delana is not a backing vocalist. And I said, you're absolutely right. I've been doing this for 35 years. I'm a front woman. I'm a lead vocalist. I've had my own bands. I pay everybody. This is my passion. This is my job. And now you want me to be a little backing vocalist chick, but that's not me. And so they were like, okay, we get it. And I'm the one who's now, for the first time in 15 years, they've sold out every theater show. It's like I've broken all the records for their show, and I don't know if they're pissed off or happy, but I'm super happy.
terrific. Yeah. Hey, now you're speaking to us today from Holland. Does that mean that you're currently based in Holland?
Yeah, I've been back here in Holland almost 6 years now. I left here in 2000. I was in the peak of my career. I had 5 top 10 hits. I just made my first solo record here in Holland. And I was playing every festival. I was doing really well. And then came 9/11. And that was 2001. So in 2000, I hit my peak. And then came 2001. And I was touring and playing every festival. And at that time, I was married to an American guy from Louisiana. And after 9/11, he said, I want to move back to America and be close to my family because I just, you know, 9/11 brought back a lot of, brought up a lot of shit. So we moved in the peak of my career in Holland. I moved to America and then we moved to Houston, Texas, because my husband at the time was in the oil industry. And so we moved to Houston and I had to basically start from scratch. I had nothing. I had no following. I mean, I was just a girl from Holland via South Africa, or a girl from South Africa via Holland to America. And I was at the peak of my career here. And then I moved to Houston and I had to start from scratch and I had nothing and no one knew who I was. And so I didn't know anybody. I was new in Houston, my first time in America. So I started going around to karaoke bars and singing karaoke. And before I knew it, I was like this girl and everyone wanted to know who this girl is. And I was trying to get a band together, but it didn't quite gel because I was rehearsing every Wednesday night with this band from Houston and they just couldn't get it. And we had our first show in Houston, our official show, after 3 months of rehearsing. And it was so bad that I immediately after the show just fired everyone. I was like, okay, that's it. I'm done. You guys are done. I'm not doing this anymore. And then I got into this really serious motorcycle accident. Mm. And I was in coma for 6 weeks. And I was supposed to be dead, but I'm not. And so In my months of recovery, I just had this epiphany, like, I can't live without music and I can't get a band together. So I have to do something. And I was still in my hospital bed. And I thought, when I get out of the hospital, I'm going to just start up my own thing all by myself. So I started this one chick band That's what I called it, Delana and her one chick band. And I just started playing around town, and everyone knew me from karaoke and this one gig I had with this terrible band. And within no time, I had sold out gigs 6 months in advance. They had to extend parking lots for cars to be parked to get to my gigs. And I played this steakhouse every Tuesday night in Houston. And the owner called me one day and he said, there was this German guy who owned a steakhouse in Houston. And he said, Delana, people are complaining that they can't see you when they come to the steakhouse because I was like stuck in a corner. And he said, I want you to come over this week and we're going to design a new stage for you. I'm going to reconstruct my whole restaurant so that we can make sure that you're in the spotlight. And I had a really shitty deal with the guy at the time. I was getting like $250 a night. And this is like 2005. I was getting $250 a night. And I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll come in there and help you with that. But then I want to earn a little bit more money. And he's like, okay, that's fine. So I helped him reinvent the whole place. We broke down walls. We made this steakhouse bigger. And with one wall broken out, the stage was in the middle. And that was my stage. And I was there every Tuesday night. And we were sold out literally 6 months in advance. And then came Rockstar Supernova. And I had sent in my stuff like six months before. And I thought, I'd never done that before. And I thought, no one's even going to take notice of me. And I'd completely forgotten about the fact that I'd sent in my material. And I was sitting, I had really long dreadlocks at the time. So I was sitting at my dreadlock hair salon one day. And the guy said to me, hey, you sent in your material to that Rockstar show. Did you ever hear anything? And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I was like, no, I haven't heard anything. So I already knew it. They wouldn't be interested in me, you know. And then the next Tuesday night at the steakhouse, I'm standing on stage. I just set up my sound. I was completely independent. I had my own, like a Dodge van. I had it sprayed flat black, and I had this canopy put on. I had my own sound system, this little Mackie system, and my own table, and I had my own merch, and I was completely independent. I sold my merch by myself. I built up my shit by myself. I drove myself. Everything was under my control. And I was super happy. And I just set up my stuff and I did my little sound check. And I started with this first song. And I still remember it was Ironic from Alanis Morissette. So I just started playing my little acoustic guitar with my backtrack. And I'm ready to go. And my phone rings. And I saw like LA, and I was like, Los Angeles? Why is Los Angeles calling me? So I stopped my little backtrack thing and I told the audience, sold out place. I was like, sorry guys, I have to take this call. So I grab my phone, I run outside, and it's this chick, and she goes, hey Delana, this is the casting manager from Rockstar Supernova in Los Angeles calling you. And I'm like, okay, hi. And she goes, I'm just calling to tell you that you've made it to the final auditions. We got your tape and it was so good. You don't have to stand in line or anything. We want you in the top 100. And I was like, okay, cool. In the meantime, I was planning a trip to Peru to climb Mount Machu Picchu. So I bought all my hiking gear. And I had my shoes and my sticks and my outfit, and I was ready to go. And I'm thinking, oh, but I'm going to Mount Machu Picchu next week. So she goes, did you hear me, Delana? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, you need to come to Hollywood. We're going to buy your ticket 2 weeks from now. You're going to come do like the next round of auditions, and you don't have to stand in the line. And we really love you. And then I go, but I just bought my hiking stuff for Peru for Mount Machu Picchu. And I'm like, I can't go. Like, I already bought my stuff. I've bought my ticket, my flight. I'm going to Mount Machu Picchu. And she goes, I don't think you heard me. And then I was like, no, I heard you. I'm going hiking. And she goes, this is Rockstar Supernova. You've made it onto the show. We want you to come on audition. And then it hit me. I was like, oh my God. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then she goes, so can we book you a ticket for 2 weeks from now? I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Okay, yes, everything's fine. And then she goes, but we have this confidentiality clause agreement. You cannot say a word to anybody. This is like top confidence. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, it's good. It's cool. So we hang up the phone eventually. I go back into my gig. Everyone's waiting because I told them I've got this phone call. So I go back on the mic and I go, oh my God, that was Hollywood. I'm going to Rockstar Supernova.
Yeah, it's pretty tough to contain that kind of thing, you know.
I could not. And then I had a few flights and a few auditions, and I flew to Hollywood and back, and it was my first time. And I always thought that Hollywood like was so out of reach for me. I could never go to Hollywood. No, I'm never ever gonna go to Hollywood. It's so out of my league. I can't do this. And then they flew me over and we had one day free, one day off, and we could do whatever we wanted and go wherever we wanted. So I immediately in the hotel, I checked out tattoo saloons or parlors, and I called this tattoo place and I was like, I want a tattoo. Where do I have to go? And they were like, you have to come to Sunset Boulevard. And I was like, oh my God, Sunset Boulevard. So I called a cab and I was like, take me to Sunset Boulevard. So I went to this tattoo salon and I got this tattoo, which says, oh my God, I can't even read it anymore. It's like totally smudged now. So long ago, 2006. So it's like this skull head. And I got this tattoo and I thought, okay, so even if I don't make it, I got the tattoo to say that I was in Hollywood, right?
Yeah, quite the commemorative experience there. But plus, were you aware of Kat Von D at that time? It's like, you got to have a tattoo by a cat, you know?
Yeah, I was totally aware of her. But I tried Kat Von D. It was fully booked. I couldn't get in there. And we only had the one day. So I was like, I'll just take the very first available place. But I knew it had to be Sunset or Hollywood Strip. I wanted to be in a happening place. So I got it there. And yeah, I met Kat Von D years later when I finally was somebody. But that was my story about Rockstar Supernova. But that night at the venue in Houston, I got the most tips I ever had. I had the this tip jar. I got my $250 a night and I had a tip jar, and I got home and I would sit on the carpet and I would just unpack the tip jar on the carpet and have my drink and like, okay, this is my earnings for the night. And that night I made $3,000 in tips, and this is 2006. And I was like, holy shit. Wow. In between there was a check. I'd never received a check before. And it said $1,000. And it was this guy from, I could see the name of the company was some construction company. And he said, on the back of the check, he wrote, we really love you and we believe in you. You're going to get this. And he wrote me $1,000 check. And I thought, this thing is so going to bounce. It's going to bounce all the way to Egypt and back. And then I cashed it, and it was true. And then when I made it onto Rockstar, that same guy and his whole family had flown to the studios of Rockstar Supernova, and they were in the audience. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Wow. Yeah, that's really quite amazing. But at least he was a person who could do that sort of thing. And terrific.
Yeah, I know the guy, you know, and he just left this check in my tip jar. And I thought, yeah, this thing's going to bounce. But it was really true. And it was awesome.
That's great. It's amazing how, you know, attraction, you know, brings attraction, you know, positivity, bringing positivity. It's interesting, you know. Yeah, you know, on your music, I wanted to ask, are you the sole artist or are there people that you like to write with?
I've written some soul artist songs all by myself. And to be honest, they've been my most successful songs, the ones that I've written all by myself. But I always feel too insecure and I always think it's not good enough. And then I bring them out and they're the songs that actually have done the best for me. But I've always co-written with people and I've always preferred to co-write because I don't consider myself a true musician. I can sing. I know that I'm fantastic at melodies and lyrics. Those are my strengths, lyrics and melodies. But as far as writing things, I'm not a musician. I can play guitar. I play enough to write the songs that I've written. And it's proven that it's more than enough, but still I have this insecurity that I'm not good enough.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's why I was wondering, because your songs sound really authentic to me, you know, and I think that's got to be one of the reasons why you're doing well. I mean, your songs are connecting with people on that kind of level, because on a very deep, authentic level. So that's why.
What's that called? Old soul.
An old soul. There you go. Yeah, your old soul is coming through. Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? It's for me, it's life experience. I grew up in Africa in the middle of apartheid.
You're from Johannesburg, right?
Yes, I was born in Johannesburg. I grew up in Johannesburg and Pretoria, which is probably like an hour out of Johannesburg, but it's also a major city and it's where all the parliament buildings are. But my stepfather was a construction worker, so we moved all over the country. Like, I went to 11 schools before I ran away at the age of 15. I didn't finish high school. I don't have a high school diploma. But I moved a lot. And I grew up in apartheid. I grew up with a mother who was a very serious alcoholic, very abusive, no father, a stepfather. But he was also a really serious alcoholic. And it was a rough childhood, you know, with apartheid. I always had this thing like we were four kids and I was the only one who always wanted to speak English. And so my mom finally decided that she would put me in an English speaking school, which is very British educated. And my other siblings went to Afrikaans school. So they learned Afrikaans and I learned English. But I grew up at home speaking Afrikaans. So I can speak fluent Afrikaans and fluent English. And my siblings they think they can speak English, but they really suck. And so when I speak to them, I'm always saying, oh, can you just speak Afrikaans? Because your English is so bad. Mm. But I grew up speaking English in an English school, but speaking Afrikaans at home. And it was very difficult for me to find the balance between what is right and what is wrong, because my upbringing at home was very racist. We're Boers and Black people are the bad people. And I was raised very much white, like white people are the majority and Black people are lesser. And my mom was so abusive. And when I ran away at the age of 15, I ran straight into the arms of a musician who was a good friend of my mom's, but he was a touring musician and he was dying of cancer. But he knew what I was going through at home with my mom being a very difficult alcoholic mother, abusive. So he basically invited me to run away with him. And I did. I left school. And I ran away, I joined him, and that was my first musical experience at the age of 15. And in my head, I thought, I'm always going to want to be an actress. So I'm going to use this music opportunity as a bridge to acting. And I'll make a little bit of money with this, and then I can finally go to acting, because that was my thing. I wanted to be an actress. And before I knew it, I was in this band and that band and this band and that band. And we made a number one hit in South Africa. And before I knew it, I was in Holland and touring and making hits. And then I was in America. And now it's years later, I'm still making music.
Delana, in that time period, I think I understand, you know, you had a really negative environment at home that you were wanting to escape from. I think I understand that. Where in that moment did you discover that you have a voice?
That's a great question, Cole. I think when I ran away at first at 15, I already knew that I had a voice because I had the courage to leave that abusive situation I was in. And already then I knew I had a voice and that I could stand up for myself at that very tender age. And then when I was mentally abused, financially abused by that first guy I joined, I also realized at that young age, like, I need to leave this guy and I need to look for something better. And this really big famous band in South Africa connected with me and said, we're looking for a singer. Can you join us? And in that band, we started writing. They were already an original South African music band with a lot of really African bass roots and percussion roots and African voices. And I really loved that because I was not racist. And it was such a black band, if you want to call it that. And I felt really at home with that. And I thought, wow, I can finally stand up for myself and sing black music, if you want to call it that. Because it was really rootsy African beats and grooves and that typical African bass that you don't get anywhere else. Those bass licks, those bass lines, the way they play bass, it's nowhere else in the world can you hear a bass guitar played like real Africans play bass. And so in this band, I felt like I had a voice. I could sing with this black band behind me and just feel free. And a lot of our audience were black people. And at that time, I was a white person, so it was very difficult because I would play in a lot of clubs with a lot of black people, and me and my bass player and my guitarist, we were white people, but we had like the rhythm section was black and we had like a little horn section that was black, and it was scary at times because we're white and it was in the middle of apartheid. So it was very scary. But when I got on stage and I started singing, I felt like I had a voice because I was in the middle of this black crowd as a 15, 16-year-old girl singing with an African band in a black audience and feeling really welcomed and feeling like I was one of the people. And I felt fearless because they accepted me. And that's when I really felt like I have a voice because I believe in who I am and what I'm bringing. And music was my stepping stone into freedom. So for me, that was my voice.
Yeah. Music is the one thing that really, it connects with people on the most basic of level. I mean, it's communicating emotion and energy, right? So that's the one medium by which you can connect with anybody. So hopefully, as you saw, you know, maybe they weren't so hip to see you on stage, but when they started to hear you, they would start to feel what you're singing. And so you successfully won the crowd over.
Yeah, but it was just by what they could hear and see. I'm such a real person. My name is Delana and my nickname is Delonist because everyone always calls me Delonist. I'm like so real, so open. What you see now is the person you'll see on stage. I don't have double personalities. So I always love everybody. I just love people. And I've had therapists tell me like, oh my God, with your upbringing and the shit you've been through, you should have been either dead or in an institution. or in prison. But I chose the other path. I'm just always honest. I'm myself. And I think no matter what color, what race, what the situation is in your country, with the racism we had at that stage, people could see right through me. I'm just me. And I didn't even have to work at it. I just got on stage and I was just me. And I was one with the people, one with the music. And yes, what you're saying is true. Music really can connect everyone together. But if you're fake, people can still tell and they can still feel it. But I'm just me. True. And I was hugging everybody, dancing with them afterwards, having drinks with them, eating with them at their homes, and just making friends with everybody. And that's the difference. You know, you can be an artist on stage with this big name and this big whatever machine behind you and be unbelievable, sell millions of records. When you get off stage and you're cold to the world and you're somebody else, people will feel that. I'm just not that person. And that's probably why I haven't really made it big, because I'm just too real. And that's what I've always said. I'm just too nice. I'm too real. I don't brown nose. I don't suck up. I don't ask people for shit. I just do me. And me is sometimes too much or too little, but I just do me and that's it.
Well, hopefully there's more levels for you coming, you know. Claudio, did you have a thought? Thoughts you wanted to get in there?
Yeah, I wanted to. I had a good experience in the 90s, actually 1991, 92. I was on tour with this singer from South Africa, Johnny Clegg. You know him?
Very well. He's passed away, but I know his son. Yes.
Yeah, and the band was amazing. We toured all over Canada. And,
Johnny was
a great time with those guys. Yeah.
Meet Johnny Clegg and Savuka?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Savuka. Yeah.
You toured with Johnny Clegg?
What?
You toured with Johnny Clegg?
Yeah, my band. We toured together.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh my God! Yes, of course I know Johnny.
You know, I saw them on stage the way they play and dance at the same time. You know, it's like
yeah.
I mean, I'm from Argentina, so I'm Latin. So basically, I mean, identify with those rhythms, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, you got the rhythms. I hear you. Johnny Clegg was labeled the White Zulu of South Africa.
Yeah,
because he grew up with the Zulus. He could speak their language fluently. He literally grew up with them. I don't know what happened with his parents, but he grew up with the Zulus. And he learned all their rhythms, their music, their language, their way of eating, speaking, living. And so when I was a young girl, I started listening to Juluka, Johnny Clegg and Juluka.
We also did, they have a human rights tour.
Yes.
In Canada. It was Bruce Springsteen, Peter Gabriel, Sting.
Oh, my God, all my favorite.
Chapman. I forgot. Many people. So we did that too. We did that human rights tour in Canada.
Wow. Oh, my God. I love all those people you just mentioned.
It was amazing hanging out with Peter Gabriel.
Gabriel, of all the names you mentioned, Peter Gabriel is my favorite guy. I just love him. That's like one guy I would love to meet and tour and play with.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Peter Gabriel, if you're listening, Delana would love to come and do some singing for you.
It can be arranged.
I'm going to say, Delana, who?
Well, check out her voice, Peter. Really, you know, go check out her voice. You know, you'll want to do some work with her.
Oh, thanks, darling.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. Attention guitar players, join the Thimble Slide revolution and free your slide finger.
The Thimble Slide is a mini guitar slide designed to be worn on the tip of your finger, about 3/4 the way down your fingernail. When worn there, you can still bend your finger. And most importantly, it's allowing enough of your fingertip through so you can press the guitar strings. The Thimble Slide is larger at the back and smaller at the front, so it follows the contour of your finger. So when you're wearing the slide, It's not loose or rattling around on your fingertip. This also allows your other fingertips in nice and close for playing. The sizing gap allows you to make the slide a little bit larger or a little bit smaller for a nice custom fit. And it gives you a 1-inch slide surface on the bottom.
So while you're wearing a thimble slide, you can, of course, use it as a slide. But more importantly, it allows you to still fret the strings so you can play the guitar. You can play chords. You can play lines while wearing it. You can bend strings with your ring finger. You can drag your fingertip across the strings if you need to. You can do pull-offs, hammer-ons. So there you go. You can actually still really do all the things you need to do to keep playing guitars like that.
With its patented shape, you can slide and fret while wearing the thimble slide. Visit thimbleslide.com. That's thimbleslide.com. Things were taking off for you and you got on, you know, Rockstar Supernova, but did you notice what effect Rockstar Supernova had on your career afterwards? Like was there a big boost? You know, did the phone start to ring?
Yeah, well, you know, the first year the phones were ringing like crazy, and they were ringing so crazily that I actually lost control of myself, and I went down the deep end, because I was just a girl from Africa. I went to Holland for 5 years, made a few hits, and then suddenly I'm in America, and I had a one-chick show, and it was doing really great. And then I'm on this global show, because it was, I mean, Rockstar Supernova. All the contestants were from Iceland, Canada, like America. They had countries voting all over the world for them. And my country, South Africa, was not broadcasting. And so I didn't have the votes, but I still was the official winner, but I got runner up. So when I got off that show, I was living in Houston, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to go back to Houston. But the minute the show ended, it was like everything came towards me. Managers, record labels, I went on there on MySpace. It was still MySpace, right? 2006. I went in onto that show with like maybe 500 MySpace fans. And when I got off the show after 3 months of being sequestered, we didn't have any phones, TV, press, media, nothing. We weren't in touch with the real world whatsoever. So when the show ended, it was like we were these big stars, and I had no idea. So I'm going down Hollywood Boulevard, looking, I was buying clothes, I was shopping, and I'm walking down the street, and all these cars are honking, Delana, Delana, we love you. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And then I went grocery shopping, and every second person was stopping me for pictures and autographs. And I was like, oh my God, this is getting too crazy. So I had signed a deal with Sanctuary Management in Hollywood, and my manager got me this apartment on Laurel Canyon. And he said, okay, you have to really get busy with social media. And I had no idea. I was like, not into social media. And I'm still not really. And he came to my house, my little apartment on Laurel Canyon, every night, giving me lessons on how to be on social media. And we made these little videos in my house, and we were all busy. And suddenly I just got enthralled with social media, because that's what my management company was telling me. So I would sit every night for like 12 hours behind my laptop, talking to fans, getting into all these Delana fan clubs, Rockstar Supernova stuff. And the next minute I was like, wow, I've been stuck in my apartment for months. I'm going out doing all these shows, And then I'm going out doing all these meetings with labels and management people. And then I go back to my little apartment and I'm all alone and I'm just sitting on my laptop for hours and hours at night. And suddenly I found myself being really lonely. Like I was the only person in my world. And it became really hard for me, like all these people just pulling and pulling, and I didn't even know who I was anymore. And I can't remember what your question was. I know I was kidding.
I was just wondering what kind of a boost you had gotten from Rockstar Supernova, and apparently there was. So it was a big boost. At some point, it allowed you to start touring, right? You were able to put a tour together?
That same year, like a month after the show, I started recording an album. I got a deal from a guy in London who saw me on the show and he was totally interested, signed a deal with my management company. And I started recording with Dave someone, I can't remember now. And in Calabasas, I went every day, drove my Harley over there and I would get there in the morning and we'd write all day long till 11 at night. And most days we started writing in the morning and by the end of the day, we recorded a new song. So we wrote a song a day, basically. It was really awesome. He would start writing beats and notes or chords and come up with melodies. And I would sit on the couch. It was just the two of us. And I would just hear what he is doing and I would start getting inspired and I would write stuff all from my heart, all true stories. And then at the end of the day, like maybe 6 o'clock or something, he'd say like, okay, do you have something? And I'd be like, yeah, I've got this and I've got this melody. And then we would go from there and start adjusting things. I'd be like, no, I hear it going here. My lyrics are going here. And then we would just adjust to like 11 at night. And the next day I would go back and we'd finish that song from the day before and we'd record it. And it was just the two of us. It was awesome. And then we went to the studio and recorded bass and drum tracks. And it was really cool. He and I had a great understanding. We got Charlotte Rivera in from Bob Dylan, the violinist.
Yeah, Scarlett.
We got him. Yeah, Scarlett. You know Scarlett?
Yeah, she was my roommate then. In Topanga.
Oh my God.
I met her with Bob Dylan actually in 1983, maybe 84. She was playing with Bob Dylan.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, she lives here in the valley. Yeah.
She's amazing, right?
Amazing player, yeah.
Yeah, but she doesn't work without influence, right?
Yeah.
She showed up at the studio and I was like, I've got these two songs and I think you could do some real credit to these songs. And she listened to them and she was like, oh yeah, I can totally do this, but I need something. And I was like, but what do you need? And she's like, I need something extra. And I was like, but what do you mean? And she's like, what pills do you have? What do you have here? What can I use? And my producer, Dave Bassett, that's Dave Bassett. Dave is like this really clean cut guy. And he's like, pills. Like, I have aspirin. And she was like, I don't need fucking aspirin. I need something solid. And we were like, oh shit. But at the time I was kind of addicted to Coke. So I had Coke with me and I told her, okay, if you come to the bathroom, I'll have the Coke hidden here and here and there. And she was like, okay, cool. So she left the room and she went and got some Coke and she would come back and she played a track, just killed it, nailed it. It's on my record. And she just totally nailed it. And I told Dave afterwards, I was like, yeah, you didn't have anything, but I had a little bit of Coke and that like totally saved us because she came and she fucking nailed it. It was awesome. This is before my rehab days. But Scarlett and I had a great relationship and she nailed the tracks. And yeah, so recorded the album. We recorded that album and then the album was unbelievable. I had, what's his name, the drummer from No Doubt.
Can't quite think of his name either. Claudio's got to know. The drummer from No Doubt,
Claudio. I know him, but I don't know his name. I only know Gwen. That's it.
Yeah, I can see his name, but I can't quite think of it.
Crazy. He's a great friend of mine. I just can't think of it right
now. Yeah.
And I was going to tell you, I had this motorcycle accident and I was in Houston and I was unconscious for 6 weeks. This is before I started my one chick show. So I lost a huge part of my memory. I fractured my skull in 7 places and broke all bones around my. So my memory to this day, even with this tour now that I'm doing, I'm like the person who's lost in line because I can't remember anything. But I'm so proud of myself. I've remembered all my lines. I don't have any cheat notes. I don't have anything. In 1 month, I memorized 36 songs. So I'm doing good, but I have these memory lapses where I can't remember anything. Anyway, this drummer, he came and played half of my songs on my record and he didn't want any money. He was like, I so fucking love you.
Adrian, John.
What is
Adrian.
That?
Adrian.
He's shown you the drummer from...
Adrian.
Dude, it's Adrian. Oh my God, Adrian's going to kill me. If he hears this interview, he's going to be like, what the fuck? You don't remember my name? And his wife's name is Nina Kent. But she's Nina Young now. But so Adrian Young, he saw me on the show. He was like a huge fan. And he said, if you're going to make a record, I want to come play on your record. So Adrian played half the songs on my record. And my boyfriend at the time is now the drummer for Billy Idol. He played the other half of the songs.
He's a great drummer.
Isn't he awesome?
He's a great drummer.
Eric Gildin.
I saw him play like 2 months ago. In Ventura, the Majestic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know you played at the Majestic. Yeah, that's Eric. He's awesome. Yeah. Most of my songs I wrote was with Eric. So we had a house and our whole house was a studio. We only had a kitchen, a bathroom, and a bedroom with a bed, and the rest of the house, no furniture, just microphones, drums, an upright piano, amps, guitars everywhere. And we would cook Italian food with a glass of wine with a mic right there. And then I'd be cooking and I'm like, da, 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 da. He's like, oh, that's a great melody. What is that? I'm like, bring the microphone. And I'd be like cooking and singing into the mic and we would write a song the next day.
Yeah. Inspiration can hit in, you know, it just hits you sometimes, you know, like for me, it often happens when I'm driving, you know, I'll be driving around and I'll just get hit with a melody, you know? Yeah. But
so what do you do for music? Because you're talking like a musician. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, thank you. No, I've been a musician very much all my life, mainly into melodic hard rock, progressive rock, and symphonic rock. So like my own music is a blend of electronic rock along with symphonic hard rock.
Thank
you. Yeah, it's interesting. But I've been kind of on hiatus for quite a while, so I'm looking to get back into it myself a bit.
What do you play?
I play primarily guitar and I sing a little, you know. Like for me, my plan would be to put my set of music together and I'll sing some, but I'll probably invite some people to come on sing as well. Kind of like the Jeff Beck model. You know, it'll be like Jeff Beck would tour as Jeff Beck. It's obviously his band, but he would invite people to come on in and sing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, what a loss, by the way. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously, it's sad, right? It was like so out of the blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happened so quickly. And for people listening, if they don't know, what happened to Jeff Beck was a form of meningitis. So like he got sick and they said it was just a matter of days. You know, like he got sick and he went to the hospital and he just didn't recover.
Oh my God. You know what? I was just about to say, like, I still don't know how he died, but now I heard meningitis is a serious, very serious.
Yeah. I believe, you know, there are several forms several different forms of meningitis. I believe he had bacterial meningitis. And yeah, I didn't hear how he got it. But it's one of those things where like it always starts out pretty much the same. Like it starts out feeling like a cold or flu, so you're not worried about it. And right. It just keeps getting worse. And then by the time you get to the hospital, they can't help you. Yeah, it's too late.
Yeah. I know my brother had meningitis as a child, and he was from a mosquito bite in South Africa. Yeah. And it was in time, but it's such a serious illness or disease or whatever you want to call it. When my brother got it, we all freaked out. We were like, okay, that's the end of him. But he got through it. But I know what you're saying. There are so many different stages of it. And I didn't know I had no idea that's what happened to Jeff Beck.
That's what got Jeff. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Chris Squire also.
Who?
Chris Squire, the bass player from Yes, he called me and he said he was going to go away for like a month to the hospital to recover from cancer. I forgot the type of cancer, but what happened is that he got like a little infection on his tooth, on his mouth.
Really?
Yeah, he bite. Something happened and he got like a little infection, and the infection killed him. The cancer didn't kill him, just the infection.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
No, it sure is. Sure is.
Some people go into hospital with something and they eventually die from a bacteria that they got in the hospital.
Yeah. That's quite true.
Yeah. My mother always used to say that I got to pass on, you know, mama's advice, right? So mama always said, you know, hospitals are terrific when you need them, but you want to get in and get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Your mama's absolutely right. So I got to ask you, Cole, because I don't know you, but from looking at you on the screen, what are your roots? Because you sound American, but I think you have other roots.
Ah, that's very interesting. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I was
born and raised here in America, but I'm made of many things. I'm actually pretty evenly like one third German and one third English and one third Irish, you know, with about 7 percentage points of American Indian, Cherokee.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay, so maybe that's where your dark, because I see your dark features.
Maybe that's really
the thing that's shining through, because you don't have the Irish look and you don't have the German look, but the Cherokee look, I can see that. And it's the smallest percentage, I get that, but I can really see that. I could tell you weren't 100% American.
Well, thanks. It's interesting. My grandfather looked very much Indian, you know. My grandfather on my mother's side was a quarter breed, and he looked Indian for sure. And of course, mom was 1/8, and she still also had a bit of Indian look, mostly around the eyes, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I see about you: your eyes, your eyebrows. I was like, he looks not American, but when you said Indian, I could see that, and your dark hair. Yeah, I can totally see that. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
And you know what's funny?
Oh, go
DNA
ahead.
Test. I also just did a DNA test because I don't know who my father is. And born in South Africa, raised in South Africa. I'm 51% German. I had no idea.
Wow. So for me, it's like a hefty amount, amount of German in you.
You have some of that. You have some Nina Hagen.
You're Italian?
You have some kind of Nina Hagen on you.
Nina Hagen, so yeah, German.
I play here. People are like, are you like family of Nina Hagen? And it's weird. One of the bands I'm in here in Holland, it's like my favorite band. The guitar player is this like real rock and roll dude. And he's from way back Holland times with like the coolest Dutch guy who ever existed. He jumped off the Hilton Hotel at the airport, at Schiphol Airport. He committed suicide. But he was the coolest like rock guy in Holland. And my guitarist now in this band was in that band. And he was at the wedding of the guy who jumped off the building, and he was marrying Nina Hagen.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so many, when I'm walking around or singing, people come up to me and they're like, oh my God, you're so Nina Hagen. I had no idea who Nina Hagen was till I moved here 6 years ago. So now I'm like totally watching Nina Hagen videos. I'm like, oh yeah,
my manager is from Germany. He managed Billy Idol too. And he used to manage Nina Hagen.
Oh,
he was
wow.
Nina Hagen manager, yeah.
What's his name?
Karel Ham. K-A-R-E-L-L Ham. H-A-M-M.
Yeah, Karel. Yeah, Karel Ham.
Karel, okay, yeah. Okay.
He's Billy Idol's manager, and he managed my band too. That's how I went to see Billy Idol at the Majestic.
Claudio, you and I, we've met so many times, and we always have this amazing chemistry, and we're always hugging each other. How are you? And we always chat, but we don't know.
Like, what we do.
But we don't know.
Who are you, Claudia?
Yeah, but we don't know each other's parts and the things that we've experienced and been through, which is really cool.
Yeah. I died too, actually. I had cancer. I went to the other side. I come back.
You got cancer?
Yeah, in 2010. That's when I met you first, I think. 2011, wow. I met you maybe the first time.
Yeah, it's long ago.
Yeah.
What cancer did you have?
I had lymphoma, no Hodgkin's, but what happened is that I was misdiagnosed for like 5 months. Because I was coughing a lot, you know. So the cancer was making me cough. You know, but, you know, finally when I was dying, oh, you had cancer.
Oh, my God.
It was too late. So I left and I come back. I was, yeah, miracle.
And now you're stronger than ever.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Shocking. Yeah. Well, we're coming up pretty much at the end of our time. I did want to ask you, in 2017, you relocated back to the Netherlands from LA. Why relocate back there? And let us know why.
That's a good question. Well, I was living in there in America and touring a lot and playing a lot. And the voice of America kept asking me to be on the Voice of America. And I kept saying no. And then they asked me again, because after Rockstar Supernova, I thought, I don't want to be that TV girl, you know? And then they kept emailing me. And I was like, no, I'm not interested. No. I'm not doing any more American TV shit. And then when I finally thought, like, okay, I'm going to do it, I found out I was pregnant. And so they asked me again. And I was like so into it. And I said, I would love to, but now I'm pregnant, so I'm not going to do it. And then my baby daddy lives here in Holland, and I told him, I said, we had like these visas where you can go. He could come to America for 3 months, and I could come to Holland for 3 months. So we kept having this relationship on and off. He would be in LA for 3 months. I would come to Holland for 3 months. And then I got pregnant, and it was during the
pandemic?
Trump.
No.
It was during the elections.
Okay.
So I said, if Trump wins these elections, I'm moving to Holland. And I kept saying, Trump's going to win. And everyone, my roommate was saying, no, he's not. And my baby daddy was saying, no, he's not going to win. And I kept saying, he's going to win. And then he won. And I was like, okay, the baby was born. And I was like, Trump's president, I'm out of here. So then the Voice of Holland contacted me, and they were like, can you do the Voice of Holland? Because I used to tour here every 3 months. And I was like, nope, I'm not doing the Voice of Holland. No, I'm not doing it. Then finally, baby daddy said to me, why don't you just do the Voice of Holland? Because when you lived here in the 90s, you had like 5 top 10 hits. And then you left for America. And now you've been gone for 17 years. No one knows who you are. If you move back to be with me, they'll be reconnected with you. So go on The Voice of Holland and do that. So I finally agreed, like, okay, I'm going to go on The Voice of Holland. And that's what I did. And it totally brought me back into Holland again. And now everyone knows who I am again. So I'm a very busy girl here now.
That's so terrific. I left them terrific.
Because Trump became president and I did not want to raise my child with Trump. So I'm going to have a lot of haters maybe, but I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I hear you. I just want to comment a little bit on that election. It really was shocking. It's like, I got up that day and even the news commentators, I mean, as the day wore on, nobody thought he was going to win. And it was incredible to watch on television. And it was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I think I was watching CNN when the two anchors were actually talking about how Hillary Clinton is going to put together a transition team. So like, well, what do you think it's going to be for her transition team? And I mean, they've already got her elected in their minds. And then the political commentator, the guy that was watching the map, was like, he literally was like, guys, you may want to look at this over here. He's winning over here and here. And then all of a sudden it was like, it's unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah. She won the popular vote.
And I kept saying, he's going to win. I just had a feeling like that there were too many crazies who were going to vote for that guy. And I was right. Like, my baby daddy and my roommate were just horrified. And I said, I knew it. I told you guys. And that right at that moment, I said, that's it. I'm leaving. I'm not raising my child here. We're moving to Holland. And my daughter, she's 9 now. When we came here, she was 2.5. And in Holland, you have to start school at 4. And she was 3.5. But the school year started right at the edge of 3.5. So she had to start school something months. And she couldn't speak a word of Dutch. Hmm. And I felt so bad because all the kids wanted to be her friend. And I said to the teachers, I was crying. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. She can't speak Dutch. She's not going to have any friends. And the teacher said, just give her a few more weeks because we can tell. All the kids are speaking to her in Dutch and she's like speaking English and she's not going to take this anymore. And finally, and now she's in a sixth grade. She's number one in her class with language. She speaks 100% English, 100% Dutch. She speaks a little Afrikaans, a little Portuguese because her dad is Portuguese. And it's like, wow, it was the best decision I ever made. And we live on a farm with cows and we just had 2 calves born and we have chickens in our yard and she has a chicken called Cleo that she even carries to school in her bicycle basket. And she's like the happiest kid and I'm like, fuck Trump. And now he's running again and I'm like, fuck you Trump.
We'll see what happens. I mean he thinks he's running, but we'll just have to see if he actually gets it, you know.
Exactly. He thinks he's running and his groupies thinks he's running. But I was thinking about moving back to the States when she's done with school, which is in 2 years. But now I'm like, I don't know. We got to see what's happening with America. So that's why I moved to Holland, to answer your question. I just wanted to be a safe place for my daughter.
I understand. And it sounds like a terrific upbringing. You know, it sounds like she's having a great upbringing over there.
Well, there's more freedom there, I hear.
There's a lot of freedom, although we're living on a farm where there's so many, like there's nothing going on. When it snows, mothers are going with their tractors, literally, with these like front end loader things. And they buy groceries and they load it into their tractor and then they load the tractor in the parking lot and they drive off in this big tractor. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? People are buying groceries in their tractors. So my daughter is a little restricted because she's so out there. She's like me. She's very artistic. She sings amazing. She sings with me at my shows. She's almost a national champion acrobatic gymnastic Olympian.
Wow.
Here in and she's 9 years old. She's amazing. So I feel like she's being a little restricted now. And that's why I thought, we'll move back to America when she's done with school. But now with what's going on in America, I don't know. You know, I love America. I'm an American, but I just don't think it's a good place to raise your child right now.
Yeah, it could just be a little rough patch we're going through, but it happens to be during our lifetime, you know, but it could just be a 10 or 20 rough patch for America. But it's still a great place to come and tour and visit, you know.
Absolutely. No, I love it. I'm coming back in August. I'm going to be touring and visiting and laying in the sun and making use of 24/7 shopping. We're here. Everything closes at 8 o'clock at night. So that kills me. So, no, I love America. I'll be back for sure. And I hope to meet you, Cole.
That would be great. I'm up for that. I'm up for that.
I talk so much. I'm like a babbler, but
When you come to Los Angeles and in the Hollywood area, you know, do let us know and we'll go have dinner. You know, we'll go up to Hollywood somewhere and have dinner.
And maybe we can sign up for that application for the RMA.
Claudio, we'll meet at the Rainbow Room and you can come and meet us over there and then we'll just hang out for the night.
We'll make you sign right there, right?
I'll sign everything. Give me enough wine. Give me enough wine and I'll sign everything.
Well, cheers. Well, Delana, that brings us to the end of our time. You know, thanks for being our guest today on the Rock Music Alliance interview sessions. To keep in touch with Delana, go to DelanaRocks.com. And of course, check her out on social media.
I'm Cole Coleman. And for Claudio Pesavento, the Rock Music Alliance, and the RMA Awards, thanks for watching and listening. Visit us at rockmusicalliance.com and check out this year's RMA Awards for rock, metal, and progressive rock music.